This is tape number three, interview with Bernard Holmquist in Ventura, California, December 29th, 1987. This is regarding leave in Japan.
All right, Ray, I was kidding Oscar about to come out with us to the Kabuki Theater, if I pronounced that correctly. I was never sure how to pronounce it. And ask him what missionaries are doing there. His old comment, now, Bud, you know. And he was just, then he'd chuckle, ho, 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 ho. Typically Oscar. But he enjoyed it. We enjoyed him very much, too. And it was a fun thing, a good thing to look back on. I can't offhand recall any else, because we really weren't in Japan that long. And of course we head back to sea and head back to the States. We went by the way of the Philippines, Manila, forgot about that. And I ran a tour in Manila and it was very interesting. Dodged the kamikaze taxi cabs. Learned that you don't roam the streets of Manila even those days alone. The ocean front of Manila itself is rather pretty. Reminds me something of the Outer Drive in Chicago. I discovered that Manila had a lot of schools and universities. Has a beautiful American cemetery there. Fantastically beautiful, where there are thousands of American military people are buried there. I have slides of that. Anyway, we headed out back to the States and pulled up to the harbor and Terminal Island and right up to the pier, and there was Mom and a lot of other dependent wives and children waving frantically at us, and it was great to see her. So after I was able, she came board ship, and then afterward I was able to, 2 minutes, I was able to leave the ship. There wasn't a whole lot I needed to do. I didn't want to be the first to leave the ship. I'd always had trouble with seasickness, and my stomach never felt real well at any time at sea. I mean, we'd have good food at sea in the wardroom. When I wasn't able to enjoy it very much, and I'd always lose weight when we'd go to sea. But my stomach had pretty well settled down by this time after being at sea for so long. So then Mom and I walked down the pier, and the kids with us, and they're all there. And as I walked down the pier, there was a different kind of motion, and I got pier sick, probably the first sailor in the history of the Navy to get pier sick. But this was explained to me later that it's a different kind of motion, and you actually can get seasick by walking down the pier. And we went home, and I had some time to go to Knott's Berry Farm and Disneyland, some of the things that I wasn't able to do, associate with the family. There were rounds of officers' dinners and parties and just everything else. And while I was gone, Cookie had been born, so I was introduced to Cookie, my daughter Carolyn. That's one thing that happened that I failed to relate. They had a Chaplain Hohenstein, who was my commanding officer in San Diego, in the Naval Training Center, had been transferred to Yokosuka. And it was, I think, his birthday. So they had a birthday party for him, and in the middle of the birthday party, Chaplain Hohenstein got up and read a telegram, which is really, to me, announcing the birth of my daughter. And I think, as I recall, that's the first I heard of it. Or at least he announced it to everybody. So that backs up a little bit. And the sailors, I mean, the officers' wives, I think out of the 8 ships, there was probably 7 or 8 baby showers. I think each ship's officers' wives had a baby shower for Mom and Cookie. Maybe I've missed it, maybe not that many, but there were a whole bunch of them. I guess that all happened before I got home. And Doris Knold, I mentioned her before. Her husband had taken the ship to sea during the storm. And she helped Mom tremendously. Lost contact with her. She helped Mom tremendously. Babysitting our kids when she was having Cookie in the Long Beach hospital. No, I can't remember the name of it. Shane lose contact with these people, but it's hard to keep contact with people in the Navy because every 2 years they get orders, the officers, not the enlisted necessarily. Officers, every 2 years get orders to a different ship or military base, and you just lose contact. Mm. And the Navy won't reveal addresses, because that's military information. One of the difficult things, you make friends and these friends don't move. The reason I still have a few of my old Marine friends is simply that they got out of the Marine Corps and settled down. I wasn't home too long and we got orders to Japan. Not Japan, I'm sorry. We got orders to Taiwan. I had requested Taiwan because I always wanted to be a missionary to China. And Taiwan is the closest thing I can think of to China. We were very much oriented toward Chinese art and cooking and so on. And so some ranking officers I knew pulled some strings and got me orders to Taiwan. And we had to pack all of our household effects. And Garden Grove, actually the Navy packed it. Someone went into storage, unless most of it went aboard ship and headed to Taiwan. And we went to, we drove up the coast, took Coast Route 1, all the way up to San Francisco. And we lived in temporary quarters there, which was a disgrace. The Navy shouldn't make officers and their wives or sailors and their wives and dependents live even temporarily in such dilapidated quarters. And the civilians who took care of it were very impolite. At any rate, we finally got aboard a plane. And I requested leave en route, because I had leave time on the books, so we spent 20-some days, I guess, 20 days or more, in Japan. And we landed in near Tokyo, I forget the name of the air base. And we got housing out at the officers' BOQ. They had a section of the BOQ that the wives and the children could be at. It was certainly not luxury.
That's not joking?
Outside of, I think it was in Yokosuka. I think it was at the Yokosuka Navy base. But it was adequate. And we had a chance to shop at the PX. And while we're there, an old missionary friend, Dr. Eitel, he's a medical missionary from Qingdao, China. Old friends of the Rennell family, and I knew him too in China. I don't know, I-T-E-L maybe? He and his wife are good friends of the Rennells. German doctor, German missionary doctor, wonderful man. And he took a whole day off from his practice to meet us at the officers club in Yokosuka, and we had dinner, and we spent the day together, mostly talking. There's no point in sightseeing. He's seen the town many times. And he was a missionary doctor then in Japan. It was great seeing him, and Doris and he were close, because Doris worked with him at the German hospital in Qingdao, Barbara Krankenhaus. And as a young girl, Doris would play the piano, and Dr. Eitel would play his flute. And these German people and some of the other Europeans would get together, and they'd have house concerts. And the violinist would play violins, and he'd play his flute, and they'd each take turn playing classical works. And I'd get invited, too, because I was dating Doris. Okay. So, it's great for them to get together.
How long did it take to fly from California to reach Canada?
I don't know. Maybe Schultz and Doris were very welcome.
Hello.
While we're in Japan, in the Yokohama, Tokyo area, and I don't know the sequence of this, we visited, or we met Egrin Rennell in Yarda, and I think it was at this time. And we had a good time together. We toured part of Tokyo and Yokohama and that area, and ate some good pastry and some good meals. German pastry. Then I requested to see the grave to pay my respects to Dr. Frank H. Connolly. He'd been a lifelong missionary in China, American Southern Baptist missionary, and he prisoner of war in the Weishan prisoner of war camp. And then he came back to Qingdao, and he was at the Southern Baptist Mission where we had our Youth for Christ meetings. And he opened up the church to us, an auditorium that would hold slightly over 500 people packed in. And he'd help me with getting printing and advertising out, and here this old, dignified, respected missionary would help this young kid who was trying to get Youth for Christ going. And he was very helpful, and I sometimes eat his humble fair food. I don't think he is operating under very much money, because his wife was still in the States and he was, had to keep himself going. And when I'd eat up there, the food wasn't all that great, but there was plentiful, and I was always welcome to share it with him. And he became a good friend. And he was also an old friend of the Rennell family. Doris had always called him Uncle Frank. And he'd give advice to Doris, and well, she was only 17 years old, and he'd say, well, Doris, you know, are you brushing your teeth faithfully and things like that? And he meant it, you know, he's very fatherly to her. And she was much more than a kid herself, and I didn't rob the cradle, but I waited till she dropped out, and I grabbed it. So we were taken on top of this hill, big hill, in the foreign section of the cemetery, or maybe it was a foreign cemetery, and we pay our respects to him where he was buried. I don't know how he died, a heart attack or something. It meant a lot to me because he was so helpful to us in Youth for Christ. He was such a kindly gentleman, fatherly. And then we boarded the bullet train and headed for Himeji, where the Rennells were at. It was amusing. We had about, I don't know how many suitcases. I used to know because I used to kid Doris about it. Let's say 7 big suitcases. Maybe it was more than that. It was no less.
13?
Is that what it was? 13 suitcases. It was terrible, but we had all these kids, and the train would stop, and we couldn't possibly get those all aboard because the train's started when it wanted to. But the Japanese were wonderful. They just kind of laugh, and they'd all grab suitcases and throw them on the back platform, and we'd round up all the kids and put them on, and we'd just about make it. And we got I was wondering if they were safe to leave all those luggage on the on the platform alone, and we were assured that it was safe, and it was. Japanese are honest people, especially that class of Japanese who would be riding the train. They're all dressed up in business suits, and the train was like immaculate living room or parlor. So we got to Kobe, and who should come aboard but Margie Rennell. And she rode with us as far as to Midji to visit with Oscar and Helen. I had visited before with Margie. I failed to say that when I was in there, went into Yokosuka with sailors aboard destroyer alone. Okay. Just wanted to finish this off that I'd seen Margie Rennell when I went into Yokosuka on destroyers, and she met me there, and we spent the day together. Among other things, we went to the International Christian University. Spent a very good day together, and enjoyed it very much. So I think I'm not going to get into our visit with the Rennells when we stayed there that month, but 20 days, I think. But we could probably cover that a little later. We arrived in Japan, and we checked into the... well, this is going...
Excuse me, do you want to say something?
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Well, had we already started for Taiwan? A couple of things I want to say about Japan.
Okay, go ahead.
I probably am going to back up a little bit here.
That's fine.
We're in Japan, and we visited Oscar and Helen and Himeji for, I think, 20 days, if I remember. And Len and Mei Lin made friends, and Mei Lin was especially cute. She made friends with a Japanese girl that was her height, and Mei Lin was blonde. And the Japanese girl was, of course, dark-haired and dark eyes, and blue-eyed. They couldn't speak each other's language, but they became the best of friends, and they played together for those days. And Len made friends with, I think it was Len, a retired Japanese Army colonel who was in Manchuria. He made friends with Len. He was a very kind person and good friend of Oscar's. And as a result, we got a lot of free strawberries from him. He's a very fine person. Adrian took us on a tour. Now, I don't think any of the kids came along, but we took a tour of Kobe, taken out for dinner, Chinese meal by a businessman there who furnished the factory limousine to transport us around. And we went to Nara and saw all the temples. We had a good time. And all of us visited Egren's home there and slept in there at least one night. Egren lived in Egren lived in Kyoto, about a block from the old original Imperial Palace, which was just a beautiful, probably one or two story structure, big and kept in perfect preservation. And we enjoyed our visit there. Egren and Yerda were always very good hosts. They really showed us around a great deal, saw a lot of temples, a lot of interesting sights. Another time when we were there, Dr. Oguni, who was a medical doctor, living next door to Oscar and Helen Rennell, he's a Christian, and he took us on a tour of a beautiful park and had us out for dinner and treated us very kindly. He had us all over there for dinner. Dr. Oguni had a beautiful Japanese home and Japanese garden, and interestingly enough, he had one Western room that looked just like a room in an American home. He tried to copy American home. Just like Americans might have an Oriental or Japanese room, he had his Western room. He traveled the world widely. He was a Christian, very outstanding Christian. He was active and I think chairman of the YMCA board. He was chairman of the Christian girls' school that later became a college, a Christian college, and he was involved in organizing a college, and I sent him a lot of material from the States after I went into education on American colleges and universities, and especially American Christian colleges. And I think, was a city councilman at one time, and he really had a very strong influence in a Christian way as far as city of Himeji was concerned. Himeji was a town where Himeji Castle is located. We had a nice visit there that 20 days, and people were very kind. When we left by train to go back to Yokohama and Yokosuka, a large band of people, I don't know how many, maybe 25, 30, maybe up to 50 people, just an awful lot of Japanese came to see us off, and we felt that we were very welcome, and it sort of reflected the respect they had for Oscar and Helen. Oscar and Helen had a big house that they called the Himeji Christian Center, and they held services there, and they started a Baptist church in this particular home. And later on, after we left, some years later, they built a chapel alongside of the Himeji Christian Center and expanded on that. And after they left to go back to Sweden, the other Swedish missionaries went out there.
Did they actually start the Himeji Christian
Yes,
Center?
I'm sure they started it. I'm quite positive they did. Oscar spent his time really teaching conversational English in the Himeji branch of Kobe University. And while I was there, he kept me busy speaking to his classes. Most of the Japanese students could understand English. It was the Himeji branch of Kobe University, which is a big major university. Oscar taught conversational English in that university for his 10 years he spent in Japan. And all that time he worked in starting the Baptist church we're talking about. Himeji is a beautiful town and it's a nice place to live. Nice people. And quite a sizable Christian community there too. A lot of little incidents. Cookie was very small, so she'd have her bath in the kitchen sink, and we'd have our baths would be the Japanese hot baths, and it's a little different than American culture. We'd sleep on the floor on what we call tatamis, and so we hated to leave. We'd like to just stay there. It was very nice. A little bit more about Dr. Oguni. He was for many years international president of the Lions Club. So for years after I got out of the Navy, he would visit us every 4th of July, maybe 5-6 years, every 4th of July, because the Lions Club convention would be someplace in the world just before the 4th of July. It could be Brazil, it could be U.S. He always come this way, he and his wife, and it was a pleasure to see them. They're real fine people. Our flight to Taiwan from Japan was uneventful in itself, but the landing in Taiwan made up for it. As we approach the airport in Taipei, we discovered that a typhoon was in progress on Taiwan, a really mean typhoon. And our little old plane, it was a propeller plane, was being thrown up and down, and we thought that the wings were going to be torn off. And we were all sick. The flight attendants were sick, and Mom, Doris, passed out and had been given oxygen. And one of the flight attendants who was able to keep from getting sick held Cookie. And the only one that was not sick was Len, and he slept through the whole thing. I think Mom had given him a Dramamine or something for seasickness, and that took care of him. He slept through the whole thing. Now, we were at, over the airport, and you'd think we'd land, you know, where it's safe. But we didn't land. We just kept circling and circling and circling, and then we found out the reason we didn't land was that a cargo plane had crashed. No one was hurt. All they had to do is get some trucks or something and pull it off so we could land. But it was lunchtime, and the Chinese wouldn't move off the cargo plane until after they had their lunch. The fact that we were flying around up there didn't seem to bother them too much. But we could have crashed very easily because that plane really was under a tremendous amount of stress. So then they decided we'd fly down to Tainan, which was a large... really the largest Air Force base on Taiwan, a huge base. So there's still a typhoon on the island, and I think it was an hour flight south. So we flew down to Tainan, and they landed there, and it was raining like crazy. So we got over to the building's terminal, and they unloaded all of our luggage, and then they informed us that this was not a point of entry because there was no customs official there, and all of us and our luggage had to get back on the plane in the bad weather and head back to Taipei. But there was a Marine major that was on the flight with us, and he said, that's a lot of baloney. So he made a couple of key telephone calls to the American military advisory group, I guess his colonel, it's probably Colonel Frazier, and they got a couple of customs officials out there, but the Chinese didn't particularly like that because of bad weather. So we were worried that the customs officials were going to be real hard on us as far as going through our luggage, and the Chinese official who was starting to examine our luggage spoke Chinese to one of the others, and it turned out that he had the same dialect as Doris, and it turned out he came from Doris's hometown. So they yacked in the same lingo, or tufua they call it, and after that he didn't go through our luggage at all, and we just piled everything on a vehicle and headed to Kaohsiung, where we had housing. We must have had temporary housing when we got there, and I can't remember where we stayed at first. Maybe Doris would remember that. But we moved into the former chaplain's house because he left within just a few days. And it was a rather large house, two-story, big wall around it. We discovered that you always have to have walls around your house and always have to have someone in your house or else they rob you blind. It was about three, four houses from a big, wide river called Love River. And it was a sewage river. All the sewage from the whole city would dump into this river. Now, it was a tidal river. In other words, it didn't just flow out into the ocean, but it flowed out into the bay where all the ships were docked. A big pier, and then when the tide come in, all the sewage would flow in again. And it was really like a sewage disposal plant, but it was actually a river, and not very much of the sewage would really get out into the ocean at all. The Navy would joke and say they turn off radar 10 miles out and come in on scent, on smell. And that was probably true. I suppose, in a sense, you get used to the smell and you don't pay that much attention to it until people come in, visitors come in, and they're horrified and almost asphyxiated by the odor. I know a couple years later, we came back to the States, it took us weeks for the smell, the odor to get out of our household effects. It really permeated everything. We had nice housing there, bars and all the windows. And we had to lock ourselves in very securely. And we had a lot of amusing experiences there. The chaplain we relieved was named Don Kingsley. I knew him in San Diego. And he was a really very fine person. I think he was Methodist. His wife. And I think he did a good job out there. The chapel met in what they call the KCC, Kaohsiung Christian Center, is that what it meant?
Mm-hmm.
I think so. Which was just a plain old Chinese building, but it had an auditorium on the second floor, which was built into a rather nice chapel to seat, what do you suppose, 100 people, 150?
150
probably. And it looked like a chapel. Downstairs, Sunday school building, Sunday school classroom. It had a PA system and it kept clean and painted. But it was nothing spectacular. It didn't look like a church from the outside at all. So that's where we gathered, and we had good attendance. I think we filled it every Sunday, didn't we? Yeah, always good attendance. Considering that we were a MAG community, that means a military advisory group. We're Navy and Army and Marine Corps, about equally. No Air Force. Air Force is Tainan, about an hour's deep drive away.
Is that
MAAP or MAAP? Two A's. Military, I don't know, no. And one A, Military Advisory Group, MAAP. We had a rather formal service. And I wore a robe, and Len became an acolyte. He and was Robert Taylor, a friend of his, became acolytes. Which meant that they would march up before everyone else and light the candles in front, and after the service they would march up in front and put out the candles. They had a little doodad for lighting the candles, like a torch, and they had another little doodad they put over the candles to put it out. And they were in robes too, and it was very cute to see these two little kids marching up there. Len was about 10 years old, and he was all scared of everything. He's a big kid and he helped a lot. I never told you before that he, when we were way back in destroyers, before I went to Taiwan, he would sometimes take part in chapel. He would recite the first psalm and 23rd psalm and things like that. 100th psalm, okay. And so he was always helpful, and he had little duties in the chapel there too, getting the track rack ready and helping me get set up, and it was very, very helpful because I was busy every Sunday morning and people would talk to me and to get everything rolling and get the PA system turned on and all those sorts of things. The service was formal. It wouldn't seem like a Baptist service, more like a High Methodist or Low Episcopal or something. It was formal because the Navy, and especially the Navy and the military, people like a formal service. If we had an evening service, we would have had it much more informal. Later on, we did organize evening Bible studies around town. And it was never really successful, but we made an attempt to have something in the evening.
time where they could socialize and have assessments. And I wasn't in attendance at these because I couldn't be everywhere. But anyway, one of the things in the morning worship service, they call it divine worship, they had communion every Sunday. The reason they, or the Holy Sacrament, someone would call it, the reason they wanted communion every Sunday is that people would always be going home. They'd gotten orders and there'd always be people leaving, perhaps not every Sunday, but perhaps almost every Sunday. Even if they didn't come to church at all, or chapel at all during their 2 years tour on Taiwan, they would manage to go the Sunday before so they can participate in communion. First I couldn't figure this out. Then all of a sudden it dawned on me that they figured if they took the Holy Sacraments, well, this was a good lecture on them and they'd probably get home safely. So I went back to the Baptist method and had the communion once a month. Mm-hmm. And I said, the communion's not going to help you one bit getting home safely. And I had the job of explaining the significance of Holy Communion. We had wine for communion, and I went back to Great Chief. And the Navy keeps sending me in cases of wine for communion. And I had quite an association with the Catholic mission there. And I'll, if I remember, I'll be referring to that off and on. And it was a nice association. I'm learning to appreciate many of these Catholic missionaries, I'm sure. There were many of them that were born-again Christians. One of the priests, one of the fathers, asked me if by chance we had any sacramental wine for the Holy Sacraments. And the reason he asked me was that the Catholic priests would serve our Catholic community. We didn't have any Catholic chaplains. And perhaps I'll get into the story now and switch back to what we were talking about. I said, well, come up to the chapel and we'll check it out. And I knew right well we had some cases of wine that I held out on. We'd become friends. And we went into the storeroom. I kind of wanted to get rid of it because I was afraid some sailor spot and break in there and go on a binge. The sacramental wine is really not that tasty, I understand, but it's the real thing as far as the priest was concerned. And he explained that he had to use Taiwan wine, and it was horrible to drink. You have to realize that the Catholic parishioners don't drink the wine. They eat the wafer, and the priest drinks the wine, so this is very important to the priest. And I showed him those cases of wine, and his eyes about popped out of his head. That was the greatest thing I could ever do for him. I kidded him about being a wine bibber. And he knew we didn't use wine, so that's one reason why he asked if we had any. So we put that to good use. Maybe we had a few drunk priests as a result, I don't know. I say that facetiously because they were really very fine people.
How did the
people
drink the wine?
No, as far as I know, that's universal.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Priests drink the wine. We would use wafers, and I wouldn't pass out bread that was broken or wafers. But the people come up to the communion rail in front and bow down in a formal way, and I dip the wafer into the grape juice and put it on their tongue. They stick their big tongues out and I give them a wafer. And I changed my procedure. Instead of saying the Lord bless you and all this sort of thing, I give them the gospel. And as I go back and forth every month, I would I tell them that this is as the blood of Jesus Christ who died for our sins. Did it stop? Oh, yeah, okay. who died for our sins and represented his shed blood. And said I would repeat pertinent Bible verses, the blood of Jesus Christ, God's Son, cleanses from all sin, and the wages of sin is death. Gift of God is eternal life through Jesus Christ the Lord. To point unto men once to die, but after the death of judgment, and John 3:16, and so on. So as I was going back and forth, I was in a low voice giving them the gospel month after month. And this was, instead of saying I bless you and all kinds of fancy stuff, I felt, well, that was a waste of time. And I made them fully aware that they were not obtaining any type of grace through communion. Grace is free. They don't earn salvation by taking communion or anything else. And so I use that communion as a way of trying to enlighten the people to realize that good works and sacraments and all that are not going to get them to heaven. My preaching was almost always expository. I'm not going to go into what expository preaching is at this point. We had a fine choir, and we had a very fine organist from the military personnel. The organist was the wife of a sergeant, I believe, can't remember her name. And the choir did very well. Mom sang in the choir. And Mom adored, she was always filling in and backing me up, and she worked hard. She also became Sunday school superintendent. She had a good-sized Sunday school. We had most of the teachers were very fine teachers, military, and their wives, and they're diligent, and we couldn't be too selective as far as teachers. We were just glad to have someone willing to take the classes, because we had the kids and we had to have someone teach it. And I sort of liked it. I tried to check up on them what they believed so they weren't teaching the wrong thing, and I got some good Sunday school materials. I figured if we had materials, well, then they would follow the standardized materials and they wouldn't be given just their own philosophy of Christianity. And I discovered in the process that one of my teachers, a lady, didn't believe in the deity of Christ or the Bible as the Word of God and all these sorts of things. The sad thing was I couldn't do anything about it. I couldn't fire her because there's no one to replace her. So instead, I had to kind of instruct her and to try to convince her that she was wrong. And fortunately, her husband got orders and went back to the States, and someone else came along and took her class. And I have the courteous toward her. She's given other time, and she's a nice person, but she shouldn't be teaching the Bible that she didn't even believe. So it was a little kid's class, and so perhaps that had took away some of the significance of the problem. We would have other activities at chapel. Later on, we served coffee every Sunday after chapel and light refreshments, so that people have a time to mix and get to know each other and relax a little bit. And this seemed to go over very good. One of the big things that we did was to start the Tri-C Club. The dependents, the kids in the community, were kind of scattered, and some of them were getting into trouble out of boredom. What are you going to do in China when you don't speak the language? Well, actually, we started, I guess, three clubs, but the main one was the senior club. Now, there's like a junior high school club that was led by a lady who wore a little funny cap, and I think she was perhaps Mennonite or something, and some of the people didn't want their kids to go under her leadership of the youth. It's a youth fellowship type thing in the late afternoon. But she did a very fine job, and I had to encourage these people that even though she was perhaps Mennonite, now Mennonite are don't believe in warfare and so on, so I'm not too sure of my facts right here. I don't remember. But her theology was all right. I checked her out. It was just that she was strict and straight-laced and not in the back of her head, and she looked too religious for some people, I think. But otherwise, she was a fine lady and did a good job with those kids, and finally the community accepted her. But back to the senior club, which was high school kids, they were at the Tri-C Club. It meant Crusaders for Christ in China. And we attracted the kids by giving them a party. And we had good turnout. And then we told them ideas we had of taking tours, of having organized recreational activities. So I think we had recreational activities every week, didn't we, Len? Or almost every week for them. Well, Len was only about 10 years old then, so. And we'd find things to do in town. We'd get buses and go someplace and fill up a big GI can full of soda pop and ice and have refreshments, and they pay for it. Their parents would contribute a little bit. You get pop in for 10 cents a can, you know. And then we'd have Sunday afternoon meetings. They would be in charge of meetings, and this is sort of leadership training too. I would not lead the meetings, but my presence or Doris or some other Christian in the community would be there to kind of guide them along. And they would have a little business meeting, and then someone would speak and someone else would sing. And so that was, went out pretty good. And finally, I guess every young person, teenager in the city, and a lot of them became part of it and very active in the group. I'd say everyone. If there were two or three that were not active for some reason, I'm not aware of it. But it was the thing to do, and fortunate for us, it was about the only thing to do in town. Now, we received compliments that we had no juvenile problems to speak of at all in Kaohsiung, Soying. Kaohsiung and Soying are really twin cities on the south end of Taiwan, and the Navy base is in Soying, but we lived in Kaohsiung, and the chapel was in Kaohsiung. How do you spell Kaohsiung now? K-I-A-O-S-H-U-N-G.
Yeah.
Soying is T-S-O-Y-I-N-G. Capital of Taiwan and Taipei had a lot of serious juvenile problems, and they credit the fact that we didn't have juvenile problems that we kept the kids so busy and so active and did so many things. And as a result, the kids, many of them would join the choir and become active in the chapel program too. We kind of looked out for them and showed our interest in them, and I kind of treated them like their parents. They come to us with their problems, especially the Doris. The girls would share their problems with Doris, and we would we try to be very helpful. We did take tours. We went up to a beach way down on the south end of the island called, what was it, Kaitojin or something like that? No, that wasn't it. Olan Beach, thank you. And there was a Navy radar station down there, and there was some barracks where there used to be Navy personnel quartered, so we stayed overnight, a night or two.
One night,
uh-huh.
I'm not sure.
And we brought our own food along and goodies. And the kids had a lot of fun on the beach. We had a lot of beach equipment along, volleyball equipment, and Doris acted as lifeguard. She was official Red Cross swimming instructor in those days, and she spent quite a bit of her time day by day instructing in swimming in our American military pool. We had an Olympic sized pool. Maybe we'll get into that later if I remember. But at any rate, down on Olan B, it was one of the outings, tours. The kids loved it. We stopped along the way and would look at other interesting sites. There was a big lake called Arboretum, and which was very surprising, where they had all kinds. Chinese had all kinds of exotic plants, many of them from other places in the Orient, and that was interesting. I'd be careful. They probably undoubtedly had a few cobras sliding around there too. There's a lot of them on the island, and a lot of other poisonous snakes, but if you're careful, it wasn't a big problem. And that was one of the weekends, pleasant memories. Another time we went up for the central part of the island. I can't even remember the name of that location, but there was a nice hotel there. We stayed at the hotel, and there was a large Buddha that they were building. Very big, huge thing. Probably one of the biggest Buddhas in the whole Orient. I think it had such a reputation. And I just can't think of the name of that location there. And this was a good outing, huh? Oh, that was another one. No, it was another outing, Sunmoon Lake. But at any rate, I had occasion to go to this same hotel later on. Morrison Academy Christian High School had a retreat there, and I was their speaker. And the retreat was about 3 days long, and I gave them a series of lectures on this, that, and other thing. I can't remember what it was. So I was somewhat familiar with this particular location. And I just can't remember the name of it. They have a lot of slides on this. Another time we went up to Sun Moon Lake, and it was an overnight thing. Went up there by bus. Had one or two buses, I forget. And probably a couple of them, because we had a lot of kids. And of course, we brought our food along and goodies and soda pop. And we had made arrangements for the girls to be in one hotel. If you can call it a hotel, the accommodations were very good, but they were beds. And I'm not sure if the beds even had mattresses on them. And then another hotel was for the boys. And they had just a lot of time, a lot of fun. And Doris and I didn't have that much fun because the boys were pestering the girls all night, and we had to keep the two of them, two groups apart.
What was the age range that you were going to be doing?
High school. So age range was high school. And then one of the things we did there was go out in boats on Sun Moon Lake, and it was way up in the mountains. Now this was way out, and very exotic. And the architecture, the Chinese architecture, was quite a bit very Oriental, but it was different than otherwise. And it was very primitive. But we'd get out on these lakes and on the lake, Sun Moon Lake, and it was covered by fog all the time, and you couldn't see probably 100 feet ahead of you, and we're always afraid one of our boats would bump into another one. And they had a great time. And then we had to wind down the mountain. This was way up in the mountain. We had to wind down the mountain in our buses, and there was one slide area, and we were afraid that it caught the slide and pushed the whole bus right down the rest of the mountain. And we had to make a decision how to do this, whether make a dash with the whole bus or just have a long line of kids. So we worked that out. Nothing happened, fortunately. But we had many, many such activities which interested the kids, and we had Bible stories at our Sunday afternoon meetings, and film strips. I had bought a lot of good Christian film strips. They didn't have videos, tapes in those days. Film strips with cassettes. I had quite a library built up of that sort of thing. I used it for the Sunday school, too. Well, we received a lot of compliments for the activities with the youth. New Year's Eve, the parents didn't know what to do with their kids, and most of the military would be out on a drunken binge. So we pretended to be very noble, and so we very graciously volunteered our services to give the kids a New Year's party. And we had all kinds of games and good food, and the kids had a lot of fun, and they were able to stay up. I think they stayed up all night. Of course, this gave us the excuse not going to the officers' party. We wouldn't have felt very comfortable there with all their boozing and living it up. They're good people. They're real nice people, but we were not culturally aligned to that sort of thing. And they thought we were such wonderful people to give up going to the officers' party and giving a party to their kids. So we let them think so. So went on and on like that. We had a good youth fellowship until we turned it over, in our second year, toward the end of the second year, to a missionary couple. And they were supposed to be such experts with youth, but they really didn't handle it right. They were too strict and all kinds of problems, which I'll get into later if I think of it. And but we were kind of tired out. In our 2 years on Taiwan, we never got a day off. Sunday we had to work, and Saturday I'd be contacting military people would be working during the week, and the only time I could find them home. I tried to get Monday off, and the military wouldn't give me Monday off. One commanding officer, a Navy commander, he said, just because I go to church on Sunday doesn't give me the opportunity or the right to get off on Monday, because a lot of people go to church on Sunday, and they got to go to work on Monday. We didn't find that heads of our advisory group, the military advisory group, were really sympathetic to the chapel program. Although, in general, we had very good response to the chapel program among both the officers and enlisted. The head of the army group is always sympathetic. I think there's a Colonel Francis, and he didn't come to chapel, but he and his wife were sympathetic. And there's another Colonel, Buchanan, and he was very sympathetic. In fact, he was speaking at our chapel, and tragically, he was killed out there with another couple called Clarence and Mrs. Bratt, Clarence and Sally Bratt, who Clarence was the captain, and he piloted the American Army helicopter, and there's a lieutenant colonel, and I knew him well. His family was active in chapel and our choir. I can't even remember his name now. It's in our records. And then there was a mechanic, a sergeant, who's a mechanic for the aircraft. And the four of them were out on maneuvers with the Chinese army, and they crashed against a mountain. They were all active in the chapel program, real fine people. And they were killed. And this was just before Christmas, our second Christmas there, and we had a big Christmas program scheduled. Of course, we had to cancel it because many of the children of these military people were going to be in our Christmas skit and play. Doris wrote the Christmas play. Both theaters did an excellent job. It was great talent for a very interesting Christmas play, both of them, but we couldn't even use it second year. Second Christmas was more like a time of mourning. I had to conduct the memorial service for them and get all the dependents out for the memorial service. It was a huge service, and we had a special letter from President Chiang Kai-shek and all kinds of official things in the service, and I preached and gave a memorial service and eulogy. It was a very sad thing, because I knew all these people that died, and I knew them well. So many years ago now, I'm forgetting names. We have them all in our records. Anyway, I'm sorry.